Welcome to the Bayside Church Weekly Message Audio Podcast, Cheltenham.
But I want to wrap the series up and kind of tie it all together. And I'm going to talk about one of the most important things to have in any relationship. And when I'm talking relationship here, I'm not talking just marriage. I'm talking about any relationship that we have. So friendships and, family and it might be your husband, wife as well. But we're all in relationship, and God is a relational God, and He has made us to be relational people. People need people. Sounds like a song. Should burst into a bit of Barbara Streisand, right? No, I don't think I will. But one thing I want to talk about tonight is a key element of every relationship. But just before I teach on that, we've got a couple of roving mics, and I want to hear from you. What do you think, if I was to say to you a key aspect of every relationship, what would you say? So if you'd like to give some feedback, raise your hand and let's hear from some of you tonight. What are some of the key aspects of relationship? Okay, Dawn?
To listen to one another, listen to what they're saying.
Excellent. Sorry, could you just say that again? Oh. No, I'm kidding. So, I annoy Christy all the time with stuff like that. I'm very predictable. John?
Yeah, similar. Just clear communication.
Yep. Excellent. Anyone else?
Time. Investment of time.
Okay, so giving time to each other.
Love.
Love is all you need.
When the kids are born, don't forget about the husband.
Oh, very good. Excellent. I like that. And if you're dancing with your wife in the kitchen, don't drop her when the children walk in. Just a thought. I actually did that to Christy. I don't even think we were married, and we'd had a dinner together, and I decided to, I was dancing with her and we're just having a little bit of fun, and I was trying to be very romantic, and I went like this and then lost balance and dropped her on the floor and winded her. But we got married anyway, which was really good. In fact, I asked her to marry me right then and she just went, ooh, and I took it as a yes, and the rest is history. Someone there?
Honesty.
Honesty is important. Yeah.
Trust.
Yes. Anyone else?
Compromise.
Compromise is very important, isn't it? Yes. In any relationship. Front row, Freddie, then Ian.
Respect.
Yes, respecting one another.
Forgiveness.
Yes, very important. I thought you were going to keep that then. Okay, so they're all key aspects, aren't they, of relationship. Right on the back row, is that the lovely Trisha? It is.
Don't hold a grudge, especially when you're going to sleep at night.
Ah, how true. How many people here have stayed awake most of the night because you've argued with your spouse and decided not to fix it? Don't show me hands. you don't say anything, and you switch the light off, and one person turns that way and the other person turns that way, and then you lie there wide awake going, I'm not going to say anything, I'm not going to apologize, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to prove to her that I can sleep. I am going to sleep. And then the alarm goes off and it's the morning. If you've done that, you are in very good company. I want to talk to you about something that I think is a vital ingredient in every relationship, and I'd like you to go with me to the Gospel of John chapter 13, please. I've called this Keeping in Touch, and you will see why in just a moment. John chapter 13. And we're going to read the first 17 verses of this amazing story, which happens just before Jesus is arrested and tortured and crucified. John 13 and verse 1, it was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. I want you to notice that. I've underlined that in bold in my Bible. The full extent of his love. If you were demonstrating the full extent of your love for someone, what would you do? Let's read what Jesus did. The evening meal was being served. The devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. In other words, he was secure in himself. He knew where he was from and he knew where he was going, and he had nothing to prove. He was totally secure in who he was. And so on the basis of that, he did something which is a phenomenal act of servitude. In fact, what he was about to do was the job of the lowest servant in a household in the Middle East of Jesus' day, and that is washing dirty, smelly, dusty feet. But because he was secure and had nothing to prove, he could do it. He could serve. Verse 4, he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." There was a bit of pride going on here. Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part of me." And so in typical Peter fashion, he said, "Not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." In other words, I might as well have a shower. Jesus said, "A person who's had a bath needs only to wash their feet. His whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said, "Not every one of you was clean." And so Jesus had already cleansed Peter, as it were, and all he needed was his feet washed. What is happening here is amazing truth on a number of levels. One of the things that was taking place here was that Jesus was demonstrating the fact that even when he's cleansed us, we walk into the world and we get a little bit of bit grubby again. And when we get a bit grubby, we need to come back for a little bit more cleansing and washing. We don't need to get saved all over again. We don't need to get born again again. We don't need to get fully washed again. But sometimes we need our feet washed because we've been walking in a world that's made us a bit grubby. Verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, because that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Now go down to verse 25, because what happens in the meantime there is Jesus is predicting his death, and he's predicting that someone is going to betray him, and he says to his disciples, "It's going to be one of you." Have you ever been in a situation where it's possible someone's done something wrong, or someone could do something wrong, and someone says someone's done something wrong or someone's going to do something wrong, and immediately, even though you're innocent, you feel guilty? Because you're sitting there going, "I wonder if they think it's me." And that's what was happening to the disciples here. They're all sitting around, "Is it me? Is it me? Is it me?" And so they want to know. And so if you look at verse 24, Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, "Ask him which one he means." He had the ministry of delegation. As you study it all out, the disciple is actually John, who is writing this. And look what John does in verse 25. Leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, "Lord, who is it?" There was something. John was Jesus' best friend. It's possible that he was also related to Jesus in some way. It's possible that that he was a cousin. And back in those days, they didn't sit around tables sitting up. They would recline at meal. There would be this low table and everyone would be just reclining and they'd lean on an elbow and they would eat with the other hand. And so what John is doing here, Jesus is lying down and John just kind of leans back on Jesus. This beautiful expression of friendship and intimacy between two close friends. And that's not the only time this is mentioned. If you go over to chapter 21 of John and have a look at verse 20, this is the restoration of Peter after he denied Jesus three times. In verse 20, Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. Now, John is writing this about himself. Okay, as you study it all out, you find this is actually the Apostle John. The disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" And then when Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about this man?" Verse 22, Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the brothers that the disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" In other words, Peter, mind your own business. And then look at verse 24. This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. And so there John identifies that it's actually him that he's been speaking about. He's probably demonstrating humility rather than say, "Hey, you know, I'm the disciple that Jesus loved. I'm the one that's close. I'm the one, you know, look at me, how amazing am I?" He kind of, in humility, disguises himself through the gospel. And it's only when you get to the end of the book, you realize who it was, who actually did it. And it wasn't the butler. And so Jesus knew who he was and he knew where he was going. He had nothing to prove, and to prove that he had nothing to prove, he demonstrated his love to his closest friends through meaningful touch. Whatever your relationship status is in life, it is important to keep in touch. I have never ever preached on this subject before, but I think that there is a power in physical touch. And that's what I want to share with you briefly in this message tonight. Let's look at, first of all, why people don't touch one another. First of all, they don't touch because of bad advice. Sigmund Freud, who lived well over 100 years ago, he encouraged in his teaching on parenting, he encouraged austerity in dealing with children. And parents, in an effort to be good parents, bought into that behavior. And so we have that whole Victorian era where children should be seen and not heard, where parents didn't hug their children. One of the series that Christy and I have particularly enjoyed over the last few years is Downton Abbey. And I love the acting, I love the costumes, the setting and everything is absolutely stunning, but it is fascinating to watch how distant they all are from each other and how proper they are. Oh, Father, you know, and all of that, that Victorian era, that level of parenting where they often had a nanny and would bring the child to the parents for maybe an hour a day once they had been fed and rested and everything, and then the parents would spend time with the child, and then when it was time for the child to go, the child would be taken by the nanny and looked after again. That was all because of Sigmund Freud. And he impacted well over 100 years of parenting. Even for some of us, if you're around my age or a little bit older, your parents probably bought in to some of that austerity. Fathers didn't spend a lot of time hugging their kids. It was all about being a good provider and all of that. And that was great. But it's more the generation now that where we see men buying into the importance of healthy touch with their children. And praise God for that. And so sometimes people don't touch because of bad advice. Secondly, they don't. Sometimes people don't touch because of cultural background. There was a study done back in the 60s to show a stark contrast between cultures by noting the number of touches exchanged by pairs of people sitting in coffee shops around the world. In San Juan, Puerto Rico, people touched on average 180 times an hour. So all the Latin people, all the my Lebanese brothers here on the front row, they're just, you know, they're always touchy, touchy. They're the Italians and the Greeks. You know, if you don't believe me, go to the airport when an airplane is coming in from one of the Latin countries and just watch them all greeting each other. There's hugging and crying and laughing and tears and snot, and it's wonderful. 180 times an hour. In Paris, France, the pairs of people touched 110 times an hour. In Gainesville, Florida, they touched twice an hour. And in London, England, they didn't touch. That's because they hadn't been introduced to each other. And I know about that. I was born in Britain. And I came from a family that loved each other, and I really appreciate my parents and all of that, but we weren't a huggy family. In fact, I'm the only extrovert in my family, and I'm the huggiest person in my family. I hug anything that moves. And if it doesn't move, I'll hug it till it does. In fact, I'm so different to my dad and my late mum. One day when they were over here in Melbourne visiting with Christy and myself, we went out for a coffee one day down at Ricketts Point, and we're sitting there and just chatting away, and mum and dad said, "Oh, have you got anything you want to talk about, anything you want to ask?" And I said, "Yes, I've got a question." And they said, "Well, okay, ask. What is it?" I said, "Was I adopted?" And they said, "No, why?" And I said, "Look at us. You are quiet and introverted and all of that. And then there's me, this noisy, extrovert, tactile individual." You know, I have a great relationship with my dad. When I was a little kid, I have great memories of him playing with myself and my sister and my little brother. But, you know, as I grew up, The physical touch from my dad kind of waned. We clashed a lot through my teenage years. And then we made amends and everything, and it was all good. But I tell you, we had only ever shaken hands for years and years and years. And even when we got to our wedding, Christy and I got married, and I remember walking outside, and my dad was standing there, this very proper British gentleman, and he put his hand out to shake my hand and to congratulate me. And I pushed his hand away, and I put my arms around him, and I gave him a big hug. And we both burst into tears and cried on each other's shoulders. That was a wonderful time. And these days, every time I see him, we hug. Hug is good. We've blown out the British. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should hug by any means. Some people are not huggy people. And if you're not a huggy person, that's fine. Sometimes we do awkward hugs. There's the kind of the sideways hug. You have that one? "Hi, how are you?" And then there are the awkward hugs when, say, you go to give a lady a kiss on the cheek, but you both go in the same direction. Has that happened? You know, and you end up sort of like almost giving them a kiss on the lips, and it's really, really awkward. So the rule is this, okay? You go that way. So guys, that way, women go the other way, so that cheek gets kissed. If you don't like being kissed on the cheek, tell the person, "I don't like being kissed on the cheek." Forbo's wife Anne came up to me one day. She said, "I don't like being kissed on the cheek. I like having a hug." And I love it when people say that. So every time I see Anne and I hug now, which is great. Let's just be clear. Let's understand what we're comfortable with and what we're not. It's awkward sometimes when you go to give someone a hug and they go to give you a kiss. Yeah? And they end up like kissing you on the neck or the ear or something. It's like, oh, that's really awkward. We not do that. So I go up to people now and say, would you like a hug? Okay, then let's hug. That's great. It's safe. And then we got a guy in the church who's quite a lot shorter than me, and I'm a huggy guy, as I said before, so I'd given him a hug. And he came to me one day and he said, listen, he said, let's just shake hands. Every day, every time I hug you, he said, my nose goes into your armpit. So I couldn't see what was wrong with that. I shower every day. I use a deodorant. But at least we communicated. So some people don't touch because of cultural background. Other people are very touchy because of cultural background. Sometimes, on a more serious note, it's because of bad experience. And, you know, I'm talking in this message about healthy touch, but how sad it is that there has been so much unhealthy touch in the world, and it's been propagated by so much of Christendom. Sexual abuse amongst the clergy that I think is absolutely atrocious, and the way that it has been denied and covered up. And I am so glad that there is now an inquest, a royal commission going in and actually sorting that out for the hundreds, for the thousands who have been impacted negatively in their lives through unhealthy touch. We are very, very careful here at Bayside to make sure that we comply with everything legally. Andrew Forbes and our children's team make sure that everything is overseen very well. All of our children's workers have police checks. We have mandatory reporting here in this church. I do not agree with the secrecy of the confessional. And when someone, or if someone ever comes to me and say, I need to tell you about something, but I need you to not mention it to anyone else, my response to them is, if you have broken the law in any way, you have a choice to tell me or not. But if you tell me and you've broken the law, I will report you, because we will not cover up those sorts of things. When you look at it in Scripture, Jesus is really, really blunt when it comes to anyone that would hurt a child. In fact, if you look at it in Luke chapter 17, verse 2, Jesus had his own little mafia going on, according to this verse. He said, talking about people like pedophiles, it would be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. That's pretty blunt, isn't it? Hey, boys, we heard about somebody that upset one of these kids. Get the millstone, Peter, and the rope. We're going down to Mordialloc Pier. The impact of inappropriate touch on those who have been abused, as well as their families, has been massive. And so some people are reluctant to touch because they've had bad experience. It impacts them in that they're not free then to demonstrate genuine affection to others or receive genuine affection themselves. And if that's you, I would really encourage you to seek help and to work those issues through and come to a point where you receive at least a measure of healing on the inside in the power of the Holy Spirit. What are the effects of a lack of touch? There's been some fascinating research done on this. There is actually a biological need within each and every one of us for touch, an actual hunger for touch that can only be met in contact with another human being. This was first discovered during the 19th century when children who had been abandoned at birth and transferred to orphanages died by the thousands. They literally wasted away, despite the fact that they had been fed, kept clean, and protected from danger. The condition known as marasmus, from the Greek meaning wasting away, claimed the lives of nearly 100% of the infants under the age of one in U.S. foundling hospitals or orphanage hospitals as late as 1920. What these children lacked was physical contact. Infants raised in their own homes are normally cradled and fed at their mother's breasts, but these orphans weren't. When this connection between life and touch was realized, doctors and nurses in many institutions cooperated in a plan to supply mothering for these children. It consisted of holding, stroking, speaking to the infant and allowing significant periods of cuddling the child, especially at mealtimes. The results were dramatic and immediate. Infant mortality rates dropped within 1 year of adopting these touching practices. Renee Spitz explored the development or lack of development of institutionalized children. In 1945 study involving human babies, Spitz followed the social development of babies who, for various reasons, were removed from their mothers early in life. Some children were placed with foster families while others were raised in institutions. The babies raised in the institutionalized environment suffered seriously. More than a third died. 21 were still living in institutions 40 years later. Most were physically, mentally, or socially retarded. Other effects of lack of touch include self-destructive habits like overeating, smoking, biting your nails, pulling out hair, rubbing the skin excessively, even self-mutilation, compulsive sex, physical violence and aggressiveness, rape and other forms of sexual abuse or dysfunction. Over-anxiousness, unsatisfying relationships, unwillingness to attend to the needs of others, preoccupation with yourself, excessive shyness, the fear of reaching out and the fear of sustained intimacy are all the results of lack of touch in our life. The biggest problem that touch deprivation creates, however, is a sense of alienation from ourselves and isolation from others. We see this manifested in things like boredom with and lack of energy for life in general, the experience of being out of touch with or disconnected with the world. And so all of those are the effects of a lack of healthy touch in our lives. Let's finish up and look at the effects of healthy touch. Scientists have shown that the amount of body contact in our lives plays a vital role in our mental and physical development as infants, and in our happiness and vigor as adults. And I've listed for you 7 benefits of healthy touch. Very quickly, 1, healthy touch helps us deal with stress and with pain. That's why sometimes if you're in pain or if you're stressed, what you actually need is a hug from someone. And after a hug or even someone holding your hand or stroking your arm, you can feel better. 2, healthy touch helps us form close relationships with other people. 3, healthy touch fights off disease and speeds recovery times from illness and surgery. 4, healthy touch slows heart rate and lowers our blood pressure. 5, it reduces anxiety. 6, it brings positive change in attitude. And 7, it improves your outlook and helps you to be more optimistic. That's why hopefully it's not just the word and worship on a Saturday night when you've finished being a part of a gathering of people. You've also connected with people and hopefully given someone a good handshake or a healthy hug or an awkward sideways hug. And you leave this place feeling better because a number of things have taken place in this community. If you just show up late, sit at the back, or anywhere and look at the back of somebody else's head, and as soon as the last song is over, you exit. And I know sometimes you can't help doing that, but if that's your habit and you don't actually engage with people, you are missing a whole lot of value in being part of a Christian community like this. All of the various kinds of touch, butterfly kisses. I love it when Trinity gives me a butterfly kiss, you know, the little fluttering of the eyelid. Butterfly kisses, the bedtime prayers, deep tissue massage, all sorts of healthy touch send our brain the physical inputs it needs to make sense of the world. And it's not just people touching people, it's exploring and developing our sense of touch in healthy ways. And so it can be touching a pet, the benefits of having a pet and stroking a dog or stroking a cat, if the cat will let you. So dogs have owners, but cats have staff. It's true. But the benefits of stroking an animal and cuddling an animal, and even simple things like, sitting at the beach on a beautiful day like today, and you've got lovely sand and you let it run through your fingers. Does that feel nice? That's actually therapeutic. It does something to you mentally and physically and spiritually when you do something like that. Taking a warm bath does exactly the same sort of thing. When you're cold and you want to go and have a nice warm bath or a warm shower, anything that feels good when you touch, as long as it's not sinful, actually adds benefit. You've always got to put a disclaimer in when you're preaching. Otherwise, people will go away and go, "Ooh, the pastor said anything that feels good when you touch, it's okay." Yeah, that's why I just put that disclaimer in. It's of benefit. Matt Hertenstein, an experimental psychologist at DePauw University in Indiana, has found that a friendly touch reduces stress and increases release of oxytocin, also called the cuddle hormone, which promotes feelings of devotion, trust, and bonding. Oxytocin levels go up with holding hands and hugging, and lays the biological foundation and structure for connecting to other people. The surging of oxytocin makes you feel more trusting and connected to others, and the cascade of electrical impulses. I'm going really well with my reading tonight, aren't I? The cascade of electrical impulses slows your heart and lowers your blood pressure, making you feel less stressed and more soothed. Remarkably, this complex surge of events in the brain and body are all initiated by a simple, supportive touch. Recent studies from England pinpointed an area in the brain that becomes highly activated in response to friendly touch. It's a region called the orbital frontal cortex, and it's right here above your eyes and between them, and it's the same area that responds to sweet tastes and pleasant smells as well. You can light up someone's orbital cerebral cortex simply by touching them on the arm. Now, I want you to practice that with the person next to you right now. Just touch them on the arm and look at what happens here. Did anybody light up? Hands up if you lit up. Okay, we've got a few people alight here. That's wonderful. Now, of course, you can't see that, but if your brain was actually being monitored while someone was touching your arm, it would have lit up that section of your brain. Hasn't God made us in an amazing way? David never even realized this when he wrote the psalm and said, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." He didn't even know the half of it. It's only science over the last few decades that have discovered some of the incredible things. I wanted to share that with you tonight. Jesus was not frightened of healthy touch. Some of the people around him were. There were occasions when Jesus had children coming up to him and they were climbing up on his knees and he'd pick them up and cuddle them and the disciples were shooing them away. Get away. We don't want children around here. This is for adults. And Jesus rebuked them and he said, "No, let the kids come to me." And then he picked them up and he cuddled them and laid hands on them. I think that's so good. And it devastates me as a pastor that there are so many questions on the clergy these days because of a very small percentage of people who have not done the right thing. I love the healthy environment that we have here at Bayside. And, I don't just go up and hug kids willy-nilly, but I have quite a number of the children here and I know the parents and the children will come up and they give me a high five or I'll kneel down and give them a big hug. And that's what Christian, real, genuine Christian community should be like, And that's what the way we should grow up here in a community together, demonstrating healthy touch. Now, some of you don't like touching, and that's fine. I get it. I've got good news for you. You can get the same effect on the lighting up of the cortex in your brain through chocolate. So, not to be outdone by Lisa McInnes-Smith, I stopped in an IGA on the way, and the guy behind the checkout looked at me like I was from a different planet. I just bought about $70 worth of chocolate. So anyone who needs their cerebral cortex lit up, all right, just throw masses of chocolate out into the auditorium. Walk down the back, guys, throw some out, that's it. Okay, Patricia on the right on the back row, Patricia and Theo, some of those guys, they need chocolate too. Have we run out? Has anyone got more than one bar? If you have, share. Okay, now I want you to open up your chocky and eat it. Okay. Let's have a few cerebral cortexes alight here. I want the worship team to come if you guys would come, please. Good for the singers. All the singers are eating chocolate. Wonderful. Anyway, amidst all the fun, don't forget, the key to the message is enjoy giving and receiving healthy touch in life. Jesus did it, and we want to be like him. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this weekly message audio podcast. If you'd like to listen to more messages and find out more information, check out our website at www.baysidechurch.com.au. Church has changed. Check it out.